All right, good evening, everyone. Let's have an AA meeting. My name is Ellen, and I am an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday night Blue Chip Speakers meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they established their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing counts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, "Yes, I am one of them too. I must have this faith." And tonight, I would like to introduce our speaker, who is Will. I understand you've been in the rooms of NABA for a very long time, and you have a lot of sobriety behind you, and we are super excited to hear your story. Will, everybody.
Thank you. My name is Will. I'm an alcoholic. I did get sober here in 1998, June 15, 1998. I've had 25 years sober this past June. Thank you. And, it brings back a lot of memories being here. I know Lisa asked me to speak tonight. There was a guy named Bud, who I think is maybe no longer with us. Harry, Tommy, I don't see any of those guys here, but a lot of folks that made an impact on me when I was here, and I mean, I was 20, and I remember thinking they just seemed like adults, you know. I mean, and they were probably younger than me now, but there were times just when I really hated being here. Early sobriety was hard, especially when you're young. It kind of feels like the party's over, and it was over, the drinking part, but I just felt like my life is over, you know. But I was really lucky to meet up with some other folks around my age at the time who I'm still friends with to this day. We all have more than two decades of sobriety, and I consider myself really fortunate to kind of have grown up in AA. It's been a while since I've told my story, but I know one thing I like about the stories that I like talk a lot about the solution. I know one thing: when I came in, I was young, and I'd only drank, you know, regularly since I was 15, and so I didn't have a ton of like physical consequences. Like, I didn't have any DUIs. I'd been arrested a few times, but I really hadn't lost anything. And I remember that almost took me out when I was younger, because I thought, maybe I'm not an alcoholic. You know, maybe I need to go out and do some more drinking. And so people told me, well, you know, just focus on similarities you see in other people's thinking and feeling. And I could definitely relate to what people said about that, about the way they felt. And for me, I've always felt like I wasn't really a part of since I was a little kid. I'm from Valdosta, Georgia, a town in South Georgia. I'm an only child. My dad was an alcoholic. He passed about a year and a half ago, and he was sober till the day he died, actually. He got sober when I was 15, right when I started drinking. But, you know, it was a dysfunctional household in the sense that my dad, you know, I thought it's strange how my dad, he's kind of cold and distant, but then around 5:30 or 6, he gets real, like, giggly and warm, and, you know, I didn't really put two and two together, but he was just drinking. You know, he was drinking, watching the news, and then, you know, my mom would tell me later on, he was passing out, like, every single night, and, not going to sleep, just passing out. And, I don't know what effect that had on me, if any. I just know that I don't know how that works, like whether or not it's passed down or what, but I just felt like I wasn't a part of. I felt alone when I was alone, and I felt alone in groups. And I had that that sense of wanting to control and manipulate from a very young age. I remember I would talk shit about people when I was younger. Like, if somebody had something I wanted, you know, I wouldn't have any problem, like, talking shit or, like, trying to run them down. And, you know, I'm not proud of that. It was just a way that it was the only way I knew to make myself feel better. And, you know, it did, one thing I related to from folks, even though I was only 20 when I came in, was the first time I had that drink, it really did feel like this is the answer. It was on a camping trip, some guys, somebody got us some beer, and, you know, we all got drunk, but I was instantly, you know, funny, but like I felt like I belonged. And I blacked out first time I ever drank. And so, I don't know. I mean, like, my drunk log isn't very interesting, you know? I mean, it's like, I did get arrested a couple times, but it wasn't anything outrageous. Like I said, my consequences, real-world consequences, I didn't lose any jobs because I wasn't working yet. I didn't lose any a wife or family because I was too young to have those things. But I think one blessing of growing up in an alcoholic household was I saw how miserable it was. And I saw how pretty much every time I drank, I couldn't stop. And towards the end, I blacked out pretty much every time. And also towards the end, when I was 20, I couldn't turn my head off. And that was what really scared me. I remember being in a bar in Athens where I went to college. And, you know, I had alcohol, drugs in me. A lot of them, and thinking, and still thinking, oh, this guy in the bar is talking about me. And that was what the alcohol and drugs was supposed to do, was turn that off. And it wasn't working anymore. And I thought about my dad, and I thought, I don't know, that was maybe my higher power's grace or something, but it just kind of said, kind of let me see a glimpse of where my life was headed, and gave me some sort of insight to go to treatment. And I went to treatment at Ridgeview in Smyrna when I was 20. And I haven't had a drink since. I've been fortunate enough to have one white chip, which I feel lucky that that's been the case. But when I first got sober, I'm a real perfectionist. I'm sure none of you guys can relate to that. And I thought of this thing sort of like a homework assignment. Like, I'm going to get a sponsor. I'm going to do all the steps. I'm going to, what is it? I mean, not 90 meetings, 90 days. I went to like 365 meetings, 365 days or more. And I was just thinking, you know, I'm going to do this thing exactly what they tell me to do, but I expect to get something back. You know, well, I expect to get the stuff that I want. And the stuff I wanted at that time in my life was attention from women. And I wanted to just feel a part of, and I wanted to still be able to hang out with the guys that I drank with, even though I wasn't drinking anymore. I just wanted all this stuff, and I wanted AA to give it to me. And I wasn't getting the promises, just because I really wasn't at that time when I was in my early 20s. Really turning my will and my life over to the care of a higher power. I mean, I didn't know what my higher power was, really. I just was kind of trying to survive. And luckily, like I said, I fell in with some guys who were around my age, early 20s. We came here to NABA. There was a place out in Smyrna called Hole in the Wall where I remember that was back when people smoked in AA meetings, and it was just thick smoke and cloth couches that just smelled like smoke. And, you know, again, like I felt super young, and I was super young. I mean, but it was kind of hard to relate sometimes to folks. But I was lucky to fall in with some guys around my age And we didn't really necessarily work the steps or sit around talking about the program all that much, but we just kept each other company. It was the fellowship, and that was what I needed at that point in my sobriety, was just to be around some folks around my age who were trying to do the same thing, were trying not to screw up anymore, trying to live a better life. And looking back, it was great. I mean, we did all the stuff that I thought was corny when I was drinking. You know, we'd go bowling, we'd, you know, go to movies, we'd do AA dances, you know, all that sort of thing that I thought, oh my God, I can't imagine doing that. Like, that really does seem like the end of the road. But looking back, it was great, and I've still got my my friends from back then. Some of them actually went out and started drinking again, and a couple of them are drinking successfully, seemingly. But other folks are still on the program, and you know, that's been, it's been a real blessing being able to grow up with those guys. But like I said, early on in the program, it was mainly just about hanging out and trying to just get by on the fellowship. And that's been sort of a theme for me. I mean, my story, there's a lot of time sober. And I've been fortunate not to, drink and accumulate consequences during that time from when I came in at 20 until 45 years old, which I am now. But I still had some consequences just because of, like, my alcoholic thinking and my inability to really, or my refusal to really give myself over to the program. So I did a lot of stuff that I wanted to do. I really kind of imposed my will on life without necessarily aligning it with God's will. I graduated college. I went to law school. I got my law degree. And I practiced law for a few years. I didn't like that. And in 2009, I moved to Argentina and lived in Argentina for 2 years. All this stuff that I wanted to do, I stayed sober the whole time I was down there. I went to expat AA groups. I tried to go to a couple Spanish language AA groups. My Spanish was so terrible I couldn't follow. But I met sober folks down there. That was a really neat experience. You know, AA is the same any place I've gone in the world, and it's always been such a comfort knowing that I can find people who think like me any place in the world. And I found some folks like that down there in Argentina. I lived down there for 2 years in Buenos Aires, and I learned Spanish. And when I came back, I started practicing immigration law. And that's what I am now, an immigration lawyer. I've practiced that since 2013. I've done stuff that I wanted to do, and I know I couldn't have done it if I had kept drinking, because as young as I was when I came in, I couldn't stop once I started. Well, I say that. That was one thing that almost took me out, too, when I was younger, is that I would hear some old-timers say, you know, I was drinking in the morning, I was drinking at night, I couldn't hold down a job. Well, I mean, I was still going to school. I wasn't, like, living under a bridge or anything. And so that's the kind of thing that would make me think, well, maybe I'm not an alcoholic. Maybe I've got some more drinking to do. But, you know, and there were times when, I don't know, I can think of maybe one or two times where I, like, had a few drinks and just kind of just gritted my teeth and the real sheer force of will, like, made myself go to sleep and not go out. But it was hard. And most folks who aren't alcoholics, I think, don't have that issue. You know, they just have a couple drinks and take it or leave it. But most times when I would take a drink, I didn't know where it was going. I didn't know where I was going to end up. I found myself in some crazy situations. I found myself in jail. And I couldn't have accomplished the stuff that I wanted to do, just professionally at least, if I had been drinking, just because it would have progressed and would have gotten in the way of all that. But I'm one of those folks who I think it's, you know, the promises come sometimes slowly, and there's still, you know, some days when I think, man, is this all there is? You know, I mean, it really is like, they say, trudging the road of happy destiny. Sometimes it does feel like trudging. But I've really tried to recently recommit myself to the program, and got a sponsor. He suggested something that has been a real big help to me, which is trying to find a baseline of meetings that works for me. And I'm the kind of alcoholic, where I can't go to one or two meetings a week. I need to be saturated with it, even at 25 years. I need to have it kicking in my brain all the time. And I guess it's another way of saying we have a daily reprieve. You know, what I did yesterday with my sobriety is not going to carry over a lot of times. And so I've been going to four meetings a week, and I'm not trying not to do it, you know, transactionally, like I was when I was first coming in. Like, all right, God, I'm going to go to these four meetings a week, but I expect to get the relationship that I want. You know, I expect to get the job that I want. Somebody told me recently that the whole idea of going to all these meetings and being in fit spiritual condition is not so we can get what I want, or even so we can be happy. It's so that we can be fit to help the next sick and suffering alcoholic. And that really helps me a lot, because, I mean, I'm the kind of selfish alcoholic, especially when I first came in. I'm not interested in helping anybody. I mean, that is not, and how is that going to help me feel better or be happy or get the stuff I want? That seems like completely going in the opposite direction. But since being around for a while, one thing I think that I've learned is that there really aren't any shortcuts in the program. The book says what it says, and there's no way getting around it. Some of the stuff, like, for instance, you know, Renee's here tonight. Renee's heard me bitch about my boss a lot at the other meeting I go to, so has Robert. But I was talking with somebody the other day about these issues I have with my boss, and, you know, this is an old-timer. He's got, like, 35, 40 years, and he was saying, well, you know what it says in the book is that you've got when we have a resentment, you pray for them, and you hope for them, pray for them to have everything they want in their life. And I've always just kind of thought, man, that's who does that? I mean, like, even in AA, like, who really does that? I mean, isn't this thing sort of like we really just all kind of go along and come together and hang out, have some cups of coffee and get along the best we can? Like, who really gives their life over to their higher power in that way and trusts that if I wish the best for this person who's pissing me off, that I'm still going to be taken care of? Like, how does that work? I don't know. That's the point that I've found that I've had to get to with a lot of different situations during my sobriety, is that AA offers what it offers, and what it offers is in the big book and through a sponsor, and there's really no way of getting around it. And they say is that as you go through life, the spiritual path gets narrower, and I found that to be the case with me. And I find myself really blessed in spite of all my selfishness over the years. I can see how my higher power has been taking care of me looking back, and I can see how my higher power has given me the opportunity. My dad passed about a year and a half ago. He had leukemia. And if I'd been drinking, or if I hadn't been coming to the program, I mean, I've got a lot of resentment against my dad. I mean, he drank through my childhood, and as some of you guys might know, when you take the alcohol away, it's not like all of a sudden you find your higher power. I mean, you're worse, you know, because the medicine's gone. So he was a real dick, you know, right when he quit drinking. Really worse than when he was drinking. And so I had a lot of resentment against him for growing up like that. But I feel like just sticking around the program, sticking with the winners, you know, folks in AA, my friends, having a sponsor most of the time, I was able to just take advantage of this opportunity to forgive and take care of my dad as when he died. And he got sick, and he was sick for a year and a half, and he was it was a real odyssey. He was in line to get a bone marrow transplant at Emory, and they said, no, you're too old. We can't give it to you. And so then we tried at Mayo in Jacksonville, and they said, all right, we think we found somebody. So we rented a house down there in Jacksonville, and getting all ready to get the actual bone marrow transplant with the donor. which is a crazy science fiction type, you know, operation. They essentially like swap your insides out with another person's. But, and then the leukemia just came on full blast, and he was dead. And 3 or 4 weeks after that. And I don't know, like, being an only child, and my dad and I shared that connection with AA. He was sober till the day he died. And some of the AA really did start to sink in with him, you know. It took about 70, or like, till he was like 70. But he really did get some relief from a lot of his character defects and selfishness. And I'm grateful that I stuck around and didn't shun him or give in to my own character defects and be like, you know, fuck this guy for what he did to me when I was growing up. I was able to be with him, and I'm really grateful for the opportunity. And it was crazy. We had him in hospice in the house I grew up in, and the person who ran the hospice house was one of his sponsees. So he died at about 8:30 in the morning on May 4th of last year, and in the room was me, my mom, and his sponsee. And that was really special, you know, sitting around that AA connection. And I feel real lucky to have been a part of that. So, I don't know. I am trying my best, like now that I'm somewhat of an old-timer myself, I guess, even though I don't feel like one, to really try to, you know, live my life as if AA and my higher power were my top priority. And somebody said in a meeting the other day that I was at, there's many, many different moments during the day where I can choose either to move closer to my higher power or move away from my higher power. And I'm just one of those alcoholics who I need to be around the message a lot. I need to be in meetings a lot. I need to have sponsees and see people who are really sick with it a lot. Otherwise, I get these ideas in my head about what I want, about what I think is going to make me happy. And I don't want to be that person, that selfish person, who I can be when I'm not, you know, when I'm not in the middle of the bed in the program. So I'm just very grateful to have kind of fallen into this life. When I first started coming to meetings when I was 20, I just kind of thought, well, this is going to be another way for me to be able to get what I want, but I can do it without drinking. Like, this is going to make me sane enough to get what I want. But I've really kind of begrudgingly come to see that it's not about what I want. It's about how I can be of service. I don't know about you guys, but, like, I have never really been in a place where I've been like, oh, everything finally is exactly the way I want it. Now I can go about, now I can be happy. Like, something is always amiss for me. Something that could be better, something wrong. I'm really only ever genuinely happy when I'm not thinking about myself at all. And I like that that saying in, that I've heard in the rooms, that, you know, not to think less of myself, but to think about myself less. So that's really what I'm trying to strive for. So it's a little bit about my daily practice. I get up in the morning. I, at the suggestion of my sponsor, I make a gratitude list, because gratitude, I think, is a really good antidote for my own selfishness. And I don't just write down, you know, mom, my friends, my job, my house. I write, I am grateful for XYZ because, and it makes me think about it. And then I write out the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and do with me as I will. Leave me of the bondage of self, that I may, that I better be of service. And then I get on my knees and pray. All that stuff that seems to me to have nothing to do with what is going to get me what I want. What I want to do when I get out of bed first thing in the morning is get to work, because I can control that. You know, that's one thing that I've kind of had to contend with later in sobriety is being a workaholic. I mean, my desire for control just bounces from one thing to another. or however, whatever metaphor you want to use, that hole in me. You know, I'll try to fill it up with tons of different stuff, with a relationship with a woman, with a job, with money. And when I say my job, generally what I mean is getting recognition and acknowledgement for being good at my job. Like, I want you to tell me I'm okay. And the way I do that is by getting up in the morning and just getting straight to work. I'm going to work my ass off. You know, like, I'm going to show you, I'm going to, because I can get positive feedback from that. I'm pretty good at my job. But it doesn't get me closer to my higher power. In fact, it takes me away from my higher power. I've been working my ass off today, and I'm super tired, and I came to this meeting super irritable and really needing a meeting because I have not been close to my higher power today. I've been thinking about just trying to control different things. So for me, getting out of bed in the morning and instead of following my instinct, open up my laptop and start working and start trying to like manipulate and control sitting down at my dining room table and writing out what I'm grateful for. See, man, it was, I started doing this about 3 months ago, and at first it was just like, oh my, it was just like being, it wasn't painful, but it was just like, oh my God, I can't stand this. Like, I really, like, what is the point? But now I've been doing it every day for about 3 months, and, you know, it's one of those things that I just start doing reflexively. A lot of AA for me is like, there's no secret to it, it's just habit. Building up good habits. So I do that, the gratitude list in the morning. I get on my knees, and I pray for my boss. I pray for her to have everything that I want, you know, which is acknowledgement. I want to be told I'm okay. I want recognition. I want her to have that. And that seems crazy to me. And it almost feels like jumping off a cliff in some ways, like that letting go of that control, like what's going to happen if I, because, but I know my higher power doesn't give a shit about whether or not I get more recognition than my boss. My higher power, I think, wants me to be of service. And I can't be of service when I'm worried about what she's doing or not doing. So I pray for that. In the morning, I mean, just throughout the day, I've got a few folks that I call. I really am like that frog in the water that's slowly getting hotter until it boils. Like, I don't know that I'm crazy until it happens. So I've got to be calling people during the day and telling them what's going on. If I've got something bugging me, I try to just voice that as soon as possible. And then I go to a meeting at night and I share. I went through a phase, and I can still go through this phase, like, oh, that meeting sucks, or that meeting's stupid. What's the point? Am I going to suck something out of a meeting, or am I going to try to bring something to it? And the only thing I can do when I go to a meeting is just share my own experience. And I try to do that. I don't have any sponsees right now, but I'm trying to get some, in case anybody's interested, because that is one thing that really does help me is working one-on-one with folks who are trying to get sober. And I really like that thing that I've heard a couple times recently from two different people in the rooms is that all the point of all this is not that one day I'm going to get everything I want. The point is that I'm going to be fit on a day-to-day basis to be of maximum service to my fellow sick and sobering alcoholic. And that kind of thing, it just does not come naturally to me. I know that I'm never going to reach a place where, you know, that's just my mindset. Like, I have to be reminded of it every day by coming to these meetings and seeing you folks and hearing you guys talk and hearing your experiences and being helped by you. And I try to stick with, I go to 4 meetings a week. I have a good group of guy friends who have been sober for a long time. We've got sober guy friends. We go out to eat dinner every Thursday night, and then we go to we all used to have the same sponsor, and then we all fired him. But we still go to his house on Thursday nights to have a big book study. And fired him. I mean, you know, it wasn't like a falling out. It was just like we just found other sponsors. But that kind of stuff, that routine, and just getting to know folks is a blessing of the program for me. One thing that terrified me more than anything else when I was drinking was other people. I saw how some groups of people, seemingly, they could laugh, they could, like, have this camaraderie, this ease with each other. I'm just like, how do I feel, you know, I just feel out of place. I feel like, you know, like everybody, like it's a peculiar feeling that I think most alcoholics might have experienced at some point in their lives. And one of the blessings of the program is, for me, is that I'm not afraid of people anymore. And that's something that I'm going to write down on my gratitude list tomorrow, because I haven't in a while, and I haven't even thought about it. But it's something that's been taken away. And I know that it wouldn't have been taken away if I wouldn't stop drinking and if I wouldn't have come into the program. So, and I couldn't, I mean, when I first, actually, when I was in this room in 1998, I couldn't have imagined ever having that fear of people taken away. When I say fear of people, I just mean the inability to form a true connection with somebody else. And I don't mean a romantic connection necessarily. I mean just a true connection with another human being. To be able to be, I'm one of those people, and I thank my higher power for this, that I have three or four folks in my life who call me when stuff is really hitting the fan in their life, or when something good's happened. You know, I mean, I feel blessed to have close relationships like that. And I know I couldn't have done it if it wouldn't have been for the program. The program gets me out of my way. I'm not able to do any of this stuff myself. It's great being back here at NABA. I haven't been here in probably 20 years. It looks exactly the same. I told Lisa I'm probably going to end a little bit early, and I think that I am going to do that. I'm really grateful for you guys for paying attention and listening to me, and I hope you got something out of it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Will, for sharing your experience with me. Hope it does. That was wonderful. Thank you so much. I have asked Lisa to come up and give out the chips.
My name is Lisa, and I'm an alcoholic. And I first have to say thank you, Will. I still think you're 20. You've grown up so nicely. I'm so excited for you. Thank you so much for speaking for us. If you want to pick up a white chip and join us in this beautiful life of sobriety, or come back from doing some research, I'll offer you a white chip. Anybody have 30 days sober? 60?
Days. 6 months. Keep coming. 9 months. Anybody have a year or multiples?
I'm Renee Alcoholic.
Hey, Renee.
And it's my pleasure to give Shelly her 18 years chip.
Woo!
If you don't know Kelly, you're missing a treat, okay? She's a great person. I met her a few years ago, and since that time, she's always been persistent in working through her struggles. You know, that's the one thing that I always know. She's a smart lady, too. And that's the one thing I always know about her. She's always, you know, taking notes and working through whatever it is, you know, calling me on the phone. So, you know, whatever is troubling her, she's going to get it through, okay? She is a person that is making the most of this program. She is striving in this program, okay? And it's working for her. She's a success in this program. She wears her recovery well. She has sponsees. And I just hope she just keeps doing what she's doing. And I love her to death.
Congratulations. Renee's my sponsor also. And I appreciate her so much. She's got, how many years? 30? 8 years.
All right.
Yeah, she helps me a lot. And there are a lot of other people in this room that help me, too, in big ways. And really, all of y'all showing up, you know, that's the big thing, is that we're here together and we do this together. So, you know, keep coming back. I wouldn't be here if it weren't for this program. I can tell you honestly that, you know, I was just a mess when I came into the program. And, you know, it does work one day at a time. Things get better, you know, with working, you know, with other people, having a sponsor, and learning to trust, you know, trust your higher power, trust this program and the people in it. Thank you.
Last chance, anybody want to pick up a white chip tonight? All right, congratulations on the chips you hold.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you one and all for joining the Blue Chip Speakers meeting tonight.
You took a rolling stop through the old playground. It ain't what you thought, but look at what you found. The beautiful thing that you love so hard. Just an old newspaper blowing across the yard. Yeah. Every raveling thread in the old rag top. A board in the window where you used to shop. Pull a cracked up smile from a pissed off wind. You put your foot through the door when you can't come in. Empty glass, shady past, you'll find somehow. And it's strange how you've changed. You're nobody's problem now. You're nobody's problem now. Well, the angel's arms are full of holes. She walks it off outside where it's nice and cold. There's a sad soul song that you used to share. There's a vacant space where you used to care. You're a spark in the dark, hey, you burn somehow. On your way, like they say. You're nobody's problem now. When the sun comes up, we'll still be here. When we've had enough, we'll still be here. When the flame is gone, we'll still be here. When it all comes home, we'll still be here. There's weeds in the walk where the home place leans. Cattails crying in a dried up stream. You take a long deep breath and blow it out slow. You bring the same old shadow everywhere.